AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu. Joe Bimel, Kersey, PA, that's where you are. That's where you're from. You're not from St. Mary's, even though that's where you went to school. It's always Kersey's Joe Bimel. Joe, it's great to see you again, and this is going to be fun catching up.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on here. Always good talking to you.
So the last time we chatted, and this was almost eight years ago, sat at Bimel Field in Kersey talking about the end of your baseball career. And I got to show you the picture. I took a picture that day. There you go.
We got
all the baseball helmets and everything there. So that, and then if you noticed, and my son really got on me about this. He was there with us, Jameson, and I busted your bobblehead, but I still have it.
Oh, nice.
I still have it. The arm's missing, the right arm. So you could still throw. Hat up there as well. It was a little embarrassing. But, hey, that's not a bad likeness. When this first came out, were you pretty impressed with how they did? Some of these don't go well.
I definitely was. Yeah. I think I got lucky because I had, like, a super fan and, like, this Dodger Blues blog that – they kind of stepped in, and I guess they were talking to, like, the creator of it and making sure that it was coming out good. So once they showed it to me, I was like, oh, wow, that's a super handsome bobblehead right there.
So how many of those do you have in your possession?
I have this one.
There we go. Hey,
I only have one. So funny story is I had probably... once it came out, I had a box that had like hundreds of them in it. And I was like, well, what am I going to do with all these? So I gave them to my dad, and I think he had them in the trunk of his car, and he'd be at a gas station or something. Be like, oh, hey, see somebody. Oh, hey, you want a bobblehead? You give him a bobblehead. So then about a year later, there was none left. Like everybody, I think, in Elk County has one. And then I didn't have one. So my wife kind of redesigned like this office that I'm in now, and she had to actually buy one off of eBay because we didn't have any.
Oh my gosh. That's great. Great story. Some great times from those years. Trying to think back to when you and I first, and I think the first time I saw you pitch was at the American Legion State All-Star Game in Harrisburg. And maybe we'll get back to, did you ever pitch there later? We'll get to that in a second. 94?
Yeah, probably. I would say it was probably 94. 94 or maybe the summer of 95. I can't remember.
I think it was the summer of 94 because I was down there because Chad Krell made the big 33 game. Again, you know, they play Ohio. Chad was a Clearfield quarterback, and then it was the same weekend. So I'm like, hey, let's go here. And then you guys randomly show up. I was in Clearfield at the time, and I took a picture, and I'm trying to remember who was all in that. I mean, this is a pretty good – so the Du Bois guys were – do you remember the Du Bois guys? Mike Sunderland was there for Clearfield.
I do not remember at all. I don't remember who was there.
And then later it was – Allegheny College, because that's the first place you went.
Yeah.
And we took a picture with you, Tim, and Tom Pitsley. Was it Smiley? Chris Smiley, the fourth one?
It was probably Bob Spangler.
Spangler, not Smiley. Yep, Spangler was with you.
And Smiley was there the following year.
So he was there. Okay.
Yeah, he was there. I think we're the same age, but I think he either came there or transferred there, maybe from somewhere else for his sophomore year.
I recently chatted with Greg Mamula. The talent in the 90s, Joe, and you were kind of involved with that, and this wasn't exactly where I was going to go, but did you guys my theory on baseball getting recognized in District 9, you know, the scouts, and I talked to guys who played in the 70s, and they said that, you know, the college scouts just weren't around here, or the pro scouts just weren't around. There were some good players that maybe didn't get a chance to even get looked at to go to college. Now, it's evolved now where you have more opportunities in baseball. But was it the Jim Pitsley factor that got you guys started to get recognized? I mean, that, you know, it's easier to get recognized now, but once a good player goes through, you buy into that? Because there's a lot of good players that we just mentioned.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm sure that has something to do with it. I think, you know, he was quite a bit older than I was. I think he was, well, not quite a bit now when you're my age, it's like, oh, we're like the same age, but you know, in high school it's so much different. I think I was probably a freshman when he was a senior, so that seems like a long time, and I don't know if there was anybody kind of in between there,
right?
I don't really remember anybody, you know, getting Dan drafted Petrov in between there.
Yeah, Dan Petrov would have been the same age, I think, as Jim.
Yeah, so, but I would imagine that played a role in it. But then we had so many good players, you know, that were my age, like we mentioned earlier. I mean, myself, Bob Spangler, Tim Pitsley, like we were roommates, you know, down in Cumberland, Maryland, and all three of us got drafted that freshman year, you know, out of there. So I think that probably played a big role, but, yeah, it's hard to say because, before that, you know, I went to those Legion All-Star games, and I think that's where I got quite a bit of, you know, exposure because they didn't have the stuff they do now. And now I feel like kids get overexposed, but that's another, you know, we might touch on that later. But I think it was just a time where if you were good, they were going to come see you no matter what.
Right, right. Yeah, I was going to mention, I think when you guys got drafted is when we staged that photo because of the draft and then went from there. So let's zip up to 2017. So I talked to you that August, you played a little Fed League ball. You finished up your career, we thought. And then as I looked at my baseball reference reminder, in 2021, Joe Bimo resurfaces in the minors, El Paso and San Antonio. What happened between 17 and 21? I saw some, if we paid attention to the YouTube videos back then, we saw Joe Bimel throwing a lot harder. And that was stuff that, you know, I guess you're embracing now as training. So explain how you where you went from 17 to that 21 season where you went back into the pro ball.
Yeah. So after, you know, I retired in 2017, I kind of came home for a little bit. Was living in Kersey for a couple months, played Fed ball, had a blast. I got to play with a bunch of my cousins. My cousin Mike was our coach. You know, we're the Kersey Kings, I think, was our team.
Yep.
And we did really well. And I didn't necessarily want to pitch. I was just like, you know what? I'm 40 years old. I want to play more of the field and I want to hit a bomb. And that's
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
That was basically my whole goal of playing Fed ball. And I did pitch a little bit, but I was able to hit a home run in the playoffs, which I was pretty pumped about. But then I ended up going back home to Los Angeles where I was living at the time. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do. You know, I didn't really, when I retired, it wasn't like, something leading up where I was like, oh, I think I might retire in a month or two. It was just kind of like that. It kind of hit me and I'm like, you know what? I'm done doing this. I just don't want to play anymore. So I didn't really have a game plan going into that. And I probably sat on my couch for like a month. I just wasn't really doing anything. I wasn't leaving the house. And my wife was just kind of like, what are you doing? You can't just, you know, you're going to be retired the rest of your life. You can't just sit here and not do anything. And I was like, yeah, I think you're right. So I started trying to figure some things out. I was talking to a buddy of mine at the time, Brent Dean, who's my business partner now. We were kind of coming up with some different scenarios about possibly doing some camps or, you know, start training guys. And an opportunity came up for us to open a facility. So we jumped on it right away and we started BIMO Elite Athletics. That was in, you know, early, well, it was at the end of 2017, but not officially started, you know, with our business license and everything till, you know, beginning of 2018. So we started just, you know, we were in the corner of this random facility and we just started training guys and, kind of really took off because one of our clients was a kid who hadn't played baseball since eighth grade. He was like a big football player, had a few injuries and then wasn't going to play football anymore. So he wanted to start playing baseball again. And it was his senior year. You know, and after having not played since eighth grade, we're just like, all right, like we'll train you and try and get you to throw harder. He started throwing like low to mid 90s. And then he got like a D1 scholarship, you know, after only playing his senior year. And it just kind of like everybody in the area was like, oh, whoa, how'd they do that? So our business kind of took off from there. And then obviously I played for the Dodgers and had kind of that reputation in the area in Los Angeles. So, you know, we grew pretty quickly and then got an opportunity to go to El Paso, in 2020. So we started, you know, a facility there. I moved to El Paso and while I was there, you know, I've always been somebody who I just always like learning about the game. I like learning different training methods, different recovery methods, all that stuff. So, you know, once I retired, I didn't stop working out. I didn't stop throwing. And then I was, you know, I was basically doing stuff that we were teaching our athletes. So I was basically anything new that we would do, I would be the guinea pig. And I would kind of, you know, we got this arm care system and I started using it first before we had any of our athletes do it. And, you know, it was the pandemic or whatever. So I was trying to find ways to be healthier too, like with ice baths and breathing techniques and red light therapy and all this different stuff. So it was just kind of this perfect storm where I was doing all these different things, all these different training methods. And then we had, you know, a couple kids. Because it was COVID, nobody was playing. So we were doing like live at bats in the gym and some of our pitchers just weren't throwing strikes. So I was like, oh, if you guys want some extra at bats, I'll kind of throw to you. So I'm throwing and I hadn't thrown in probably 2 or 3 months. Right. So I just get up there and I'm throwing about 83, 84 and, you know, just trying to let them hit it. And then I started adding a little bit. By the end of the session, I hit 90 and I was like, what the heck? Like I used to have to train, you know, when I was playing in my 30s, there was no way I was hitting 90 and just like a random bullpen.
Yes. I mean,
random live at bats.
Yeah. You're like 43, 44 years old here. And your prime time career, your velocity was where?
I'd say the highest it's been, you know, I would touch 95 once in a while. Okay. I do have a video in like, I think it was 2003. It was a 1-2 pitch to Todd Helton and it said 99 on the board and then it said 99 on TV. So I always claim that. I don't know if it was a misread or what, but okay. I claim it. I say that's what I've topped out of, but that was like that was just kind of a fluke outing where my velocity was up for some reason.
Right.
But yeah, I would, if I let one rip, it would be maybe 93 to 95, okay. But I usually sat in like the 88 to 91 mile an hour range, you know, in my 20s. And then in my 30s, I didn't hit 95 one time. So, you know, I went through my whole 30s in the big leagues, didn't hit 95. And then, you know, I'm like, well, if I'm hitting 90 right now, I might as well just start training for fun and see where I can get. And I ended up getting up to 95 in our gym, you know, in live at bats against these high school and college kids. And I was just like, man, do I have to like come back and try and play? Like I had no, it wasn't a thing where I had like, I was upset that I retired or, you know, some guys, they stop playing or the game gets taken away from them and they're bitter about it. And that wasn't my case at all. I was happy to be retired. You know, there wasn't a day that went by when I was retired where I was like, oh man, I really miss playing. So I was kind of a little apprehensive because I didn't necessarily want to play, but I was like, if I'm throwing 95, I feel like I have to. So I started throwing for some scouts and wasn't getting signed. You know, I was 44 years old and I think everyone was like, well, there's no way you'd last like a full season or something at that age. But an opportunity for me came up to pitch against Israel's Olympic team because, again, it was COVID and they couldn't find, you know, anybody to play against them. None of the minor league or none of the major league teams would let their minor leaguers play, you know, down in Arizona against them. So we put a team together of guys that we trained in El Paso and in LA, and we went to play Team Israel. And so I pitched one of the games and I was, you know, up to 94. And then we played the next day and I was going to pitch again back to back. And I was like, you know what? Like all these kids came here. I'm freaking old. I already had my time. So I'm going to let these kids play. And just so happened, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Eric Sim. He's a YouTuber. I trained with him a little bit at Driveline back in like 2016, I think, but he's become a pretty successful like baseball YouTuber. But he was on our team. And then so after the second game the next day, I was like, hey, how about I face you in like live at bats? And we had a radar gun and stuff. So I faced him in live at bats. I hit 95 in those live at bats. And it just so happened that a guy with the Padres, who's like one of their senior advisors, Logan White, he was with the Dodgers. He was a scouting director with the Dodgers when I was there. And he drafted, you know, Russell Martin and Clayton Kershaw and Jonathan Broxton, all those guys, Matt Kemp. So really good dude. But his son like followed me on Instagram and his son was telling him, hey, you guys got to like look at Bimal. Like he's throwing 95, he's 44. Now you should definitely sign him. So after I threw those live at bats to Eric Sim, I get a phone call and it's Logan White. And he wanted me to come to Arizona. You know, I was already in Arizona. I was going home, but he wanted me to come back and throw against like some of their minor leaguers and see if they wanted to sign me. So like a few weeks later, I go there and it was so funny because I can see all like the brass and all these coaches and stuff. They're kind of looking at each other like, why is Joe Bimal here throwing for us? Like he's freaking old. So it was just funny. And then I step on the mound and I'm just blowing it by guys. My stuff was good. And they were all just kind of looking at each other like, is this for real? So they ended up signing me, you know, and I came back, pitched for that season. I went to AA first. Right. And I just had a blast. You know, there was no pressure on me. I was just there to have fun. And like I said, I didn't know if I wanted to play. So when they signed me, I went to Arizona to pitch for a little bit to get ready. And I walked into the clubhouse and my wife was there. She was in the hotel and I was just about to go to the field. I'm like, I might be home in a couple hours. I just don't know if I want to do this. And I went in and as soon as I got there, I like text her. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be here. Like this feels like home, you know? So it was a pretty cool experience. I had a blast. You know, I'm riding on 12, we're going on 12 hour bus rides and I'm sitting there with a smile on my face. You know, everybody else is just like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And I'm just like, oh, this is awesome. You know, it's just, you forget, you know, obviously everything's perspective and, I just really enjoyed myself. And then eventually I pitched so well at Double A, they had to call me up to Triple A. But that year they were using Triple A as like the bubble or whatever, you know. So you had to kind of go to Triple A first. And then, you know, they basically said they wouldn't call me up to Triple A unless they were calling me up to the big leagues. So I went there thinking, oh, I'll probably be here for a week. So first week I was pitching really well. Didn't get called up, didn't pitch great. A few times after that, you know, just you're pitching in Albuquerque and El Paso, high elevation, which makes it a little tough, but I felt like I was definitely throwing good enough to get called up. And then kind of San Diego started to collapse that year. They were, I think they had like a 97% chance to make the playoffs at one point, and then they didn't make it. So it was, I think they were in the middle of that, you know, bad run and bad collapse. So I don't think they felt calling up a 44-year-old was going to be their savior, and that would probably be a bad look for them. So didn't happen, which, you know, I obviously I came back to, because I wanted to make it back to the big leagues, but I don't, you know, it was so fun for me. I loved every minute of it.
That's awesome. And during that time of you ramping up to realize you could get professional minor league hitters out, you've probably developed some concepts that you're using today. How would you sum up, you know, I don't know if this is a sales pitch, but I mean, what are you trying to promote in your organization as far as making kids throw harder and safer? Because that's the two things that you put with your sales pitch or with your information. You want to be safe. You want these kids to throw hard and safe. Obviously, you're promoting anytime you get a chance. But so what philosophies are you going with? Driveline is what you're using. Tell me where Driveline, remind me where that started to come into baseball. I'm sure you were in the game when that became popular. And what are you doing with that in your business?
Yeah, I mean, I trained at Driveline in 2016. I feel like I was one of their like first pro guys that went up there. You know, after I had Tommy John in 2012, I came back, velocity was down a little bit. You know, and I had Tommy John at 35 years old, so I was a little older. So that recovery and stuff was just a little tougher being, you know, not being in my 20s, being in my mid to late 30s. Right. And so I was just trying to find ways to get back my velocity and, you know, tried a couple different things that worked. And then, you know, I wanted to experiment and see if I, you know, cause the game was just trending in that direction. Velocity, people weren't signing you unless, you know, you had higher velo.
Right.
And, you know, I came out of the 2015 season where I pitched, I thought I had like a really good year. I had about a week and a half period with the Mariners that year where I was really bad. I was kind of trying to fight through an injury, which was stupid of me. And it really hurt my performance for that, you know, that it was literally a week and a half and I pitched about an inning and two thirds and gave up, I don't know, like 12 earned runs or something like that. Right. So as a reliever, you know, that kind of messes your whole season. But then I finished strong and, you know, I'll never forget, because this ends up being my last big league game, is I was pitching against the A's and I pitched, I think, two innings. And the last inning, I was walking off the field and I looked back and it said, you know, had my name on the scoreboard, Bimo, and my ERA was a 3.99. And I just always grew up that if you had under a four,
right,
you had a good year, especially I pitched in, you know, enough games. It wasn't like pitched in five or six games or something like that. So I was pretty excited about the year that I had, you know, with that bad week and a half. And then I went into that off season and just nobody wanted to sign me. You know, it was just a time where they were looking at velocity and they didn't want guys that threw, you know, 86 to 91. So I figured, well, you know, I can sit here and complain about it and not like it, but I can also do something to try and get better and try and throw harder. So I did go up there and, you know, we use a few things that I learned there. Obviously, at that time I started throwing plyo balls and we have plyo balls that we sell and we throw them. They're not like the end all be all by any means. They're a tool like anything else. But we've also developed kind of our own system. So it's not necessarily, you know, driveline system. It's our own. Okay. And yeah, one of the biggest things with us is it really depends on the athlete's goals. So if you get a guy that they come in and they're like, hey, I want to play in the big league someday, and they're throwing 80 miles an hour, then you're like, all right, well, if that's your goal, we have some work to do. You know what I mean? Because you're not going to play in the big leagues if you're throwing 80. Those guys are very few and far between. You know, even in the 80s, even 90 now isn't very hard.
Right.
You know, when you're looking at all the guys that are there. So we kind of take what you want to do. Do you want to play D1? Do you want to just maybe make your high school team? Because we're going to do, if that's the case, we're going to do different things than we would if you want to play in college, or, you know, you want to play at an NAIA, or you want to, you know, play D1, D2, whatever that is. Then we come up with a game plan to kind of help you reach those goals. And it is, most of it is based on health, because obviously if you're not healthy, you're not going to be on the field and you're not going to play. And in some instances we will chase velocity, with certain guys, but also we got to remember that, like I said, we got to do it in a safe way. So, we have like what's called a dynamometer that you put on your wrist, and at least once a week, you know, it's through this app called the Arm Care app. And at least once a week, we will test your arm strength. And, you know, it tests your internal rotation strength, external, your scaption strength, your grip strength. And based on those numbers, we'll kind of curate an arm care program for you, that's designed specifically for your needs. So, you know, some guys will have higher internal rotation than external, and we want those a little more balanced. And sometimes it's the opposite. And if, you know, usually injuries happen because it's either one, a lack of strength, or it's a huge imbalance. So, and there are other factors, obviously, like workload and fatigue and mechanics can play a factor. But the biggest ones are usually strength and imbalances, you know, within your shoulder. And so if we do have a guy who needs to throw harder, we'll look at his numbers that week. And if those numbers are down, we'll be like, hey, you know, you've got some fatigue, something's going on, your arm's tired. We're not going to do your velocity today because it doesn't make sense for you to do it while your strength's down and you end up getting hurt and now you can't play and you can't pitch.
Right.
And then the other thing is remembering that we're trying to get better on the field. You know, we're not trying to get better in a gym atmosphere.
Right.
Like guys will throw off the mound and they're throwing, you know, 95, but they might be spraying it all over the place. And maybe sometimes that's fine if that's what we're trying to do. And then we can dial it in and get them to throw strikes and, you know, command the zone. But also, you know, with our strength program, we have to remember we're not trying to create bodybuilders. We're trying to create athletes. So we get a full balanced strength program, mobility, kind of everything that you need. And then it always changes. We're always testing, retesting, collecting data. I mean, if you can't prove it to me with data, like, you know, I won't believe you. Because a lot of times it's like, we've had kids who even have trained with us and been like, oh, I want to go do this because they do more explosive things. And I'm just like, wait a second, I have this data here. We have this thing called a VBT device. And what it does is it measures your bars. It has a string basically into this decoder type box, and it measures how fast you're moving the barbell. And somebody a lot smarter than me came up with, if you're moving the barbell at like 0.8 meters per second, that's kind of the threshold between like speed and power.
Interesting. And,
you know, really recruits those fast twitch muscle fibers. So that's kind of the threshold of where we want you when you're doing certain movements, you know, and we will do heavier things and stuff like that, but we also want you to be explosive. And, you know, we've had kids who are like, oh, I want to do more explosive stuff. And then I look at the data and I go, hey, you were doing that stuff when you came in, and now you're moving 100 more pounds, you know, at 0.8 meters per second. So you are actually more explosive, and you might not be jumping around and doing box jumps and stuff like that, which we do that stuff. But, you know, we have the data right here that shows that you're more explosive than you've ever been. So, you know, that's why we do it. That's why we record basically everything. And, you know, it's all about testing, retesting, making sure they're getting better. And that's our goal. We want you better on the field.
And it's not about pitching. You also, this is a baseball player place. This isn't just pitching.
Right. Yeah. We have hitting. You know, we've got a lot of good coaches. I'm not going to teach you the mechanics of a swing, you know.
Right.
I never really learned how to swing. I could just do it. But I don't know how to teach it. I know that the bigger that I've been and the stronger I've been, I've hit the ball harder off a tee. Like the biggest and strongest I've been, I was, you know, I would still take hacks off the tee. And, you know, we have stuff that measures your, you know, exit velocity and all that. And, you know, I've hit a ball 112.5 off a tee. And the only reason I could do that is because I was big and strong. So, you know, that's another thing. Like, we kind of have a motto that I learned from a guy, Ryan Croton, who's he's just a really smart dude. He's got a PhD in biomechanics. He used to be at the Angels, and he's part of the arm care program. But, you know, he has this saying that strength matters most. And, you know, it couldn't be more true. It's just, if you're strong, it cleans up a lot of things mechanically. It cleans up what you're able to do, you know, on the field and how you're able to swing. And, you know, I have a guy that I train that goes to Penn State Barron, and we haven't done any sprint work, but he's just gotten bigger and stronger. And he ran his fastest 60 he's ever run. I think he ran like a 6.8 or something, and he'd never run under like a 7.3. So, being strong, it just cures a lot of things. If you have things going on that you're not doing correctly.
How rewarding is it to helping kids achieve their goals? You know, there's different levels. My son plays D3 ball at La Roche. He's had a blast there. He has 1 year left, Jameson. And, you know, a lot of people said, you know, if you really want to play bad enough and you know, you have to be good to a certain point, you're going to find a place to play, whether, you know, at some level in college. How rewarding is it to see these different skill levels and how these kids are trying to get there? Because that's what you're trying to do. Your love of the game, you're trying to give it back.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the funny thing is when we first started our training facility in LA, I was like, oh, you know what? I only want to work with like big leaguers or minor leaguers or high level, like college guys. I don't necessarily want to work with, you know, lower level guys. And then we actually had a kid come in, one of our first guys. He was a freshman, and he walked through the doors, and he's just a little guy, you know, not a lot of athletic skill. And, you know, we had him throw. We're like, here, take, he was a catcher, and we're like, here, take this ball. Like, I want you to throw this ball as hard as you can into this net and just see. And he's winding up, and he's throwing, and he's shuffling, and he's grunting, and it's like 55 miles an hour. And I'm just like, and I did a mobility screening on him, and I'm just like, man, you're like a 70-year-old in a freaking 13-year-old's body. Like, wow. Mobility was just bad. He was right. Stiff, couldn't do stuff. I'm like, what is going on? And I remember telling my business partner, I'm like, what are we supposed to do to like help this kid? Like, I don't know. His goal at the time was he wanted to play. He wanted to start varsity, you know? So we worked with him for 4 years, and he actually gets a scholarship to play in college at Menlo College, like in Northern California. And I was just like, that's crazy. You know, like, so that was probably one of the most rewarding instances, right? You know, because I was just like, holy cow. Like, this was somebody I'd, you know, originally thought like, oh, I'm not going to work with that kid. And then you do it and you realize all they need is somebody to, you know, tell them they can do it, but also give them the program. Obviously they provide the work. We don't provide like a magic pill where you're just because you show up, you're going to get good. You have to really dedicate yourself. And it's not easy. Like the stuff that we do is not easy. We're, you know, lifting at least four times a week. You're doing all your throwing, all your hitting, all your mobility. And plus you're also going to school. So you're going to high school and you got to get in there when you can, and you got homework. So we understand, that it's a huge commitment, but we always find that the guys who want it, they commit themselves and they find time to get everything done. And we've just seen incredible results with those kind of players. But then, even the better players, the guys who are in the big leagues and the guys who, are in college and they want to get drafted, and maybe they don't get drafted, but we can provide an opportunity for them to play indie ball and then get signed by an affiliate or something like that. So it's just been, it's been really cool.
And you're still a parent, of 11 year old. And I look back at my son, who, again, the Division III athlete, and looking back to what we did, and we meaning the people that we had together, that we took a group of kids and played as much baseball as we could over the year. No regrets on our end as far as giving them a chance to play. I mean, Jameson played many games at Memorial Park. Yeah, he loved playing up there, actually. A personal favorite place of him, probably because of what he did. But the thing is, getting these kids out playing and not overwhelming them necessarily, but doing as much as they want to do. And then, as you say, individually, if they want to get better, it's up to them at some point. What would be your base? I mean, you have a 10, 11-year-old right now. What would be your basic advice to parents who, number one, maybe wants to say, well, he really loves baseball. What's the right way to do it? Or what's the wrong way to do it? And that's as far as like raising a kid, because we always see it. Boy, that dad's going to ruin that kid, or that, this family's just leaning on their kid way too much. Or boy, if they push him a little bit more, he could be really good. Where's the balance there? And what do you see?
Well, I think obviously the kid wants to do it. He has to want to do it. And then, you can provide provide what you need to provide to help them get better. I think as long as they're the ones who, want to do it. Like my son, funny story is, I played with Pat Mahomes, in Pittsburgh, and his son is Patrick Mahomes, right? So my son knows that. And he's like, he watched the show Quarterbacks, the first one that came out, and he just loved Patrick Mahomes. And I was like, oh yeah, I played with his dad. And so my son wants to be an NFL quarterback, and he's like, well, you play in the big leagues and I'm your son, and Patrick Mahomes' dad played in the big leagues. Fair. So that means I could be an NFL quarterback too. And I'm like, yes, absolutely, you can. So we haven't let him play tackle yet.
Right.
He's only 10, and he plays flag football, but he loves it. Like, he has a football in his hand at all times. He's throwing it into the couch. He's running around. He's going outside. He does have a football helmet, so he'll put like his real football helmet on. He's out in the yard running around, throwing to chairs and stuff like that. So it's super easy when, you have a kid that is that into it. And he loves baseball too. So that's been fun the last couple of years, because, we'll go out in the backyard and hit. And my cousin Mike at Bimal Baseball has like a hitting school, and he loves to go to that. And, I think if your child has that desire, it's easier to kind of provide more avenues for them than if they're just like, yeah, and maybe they could be good. But if they just don't have that love and they don't have that desire to do it, it's going to be tough. They're not going to want to do it when they're 17, 18. With that being said, being good at stuff is pretty cool, but if it feels like a job, or you're getting kind of drug all over the country and you don't really want to do it, those kids are usually going to be the ones that burn out pretty quickly. And then on the other side of it, you got to know when to kind of pull the reins back as well, because I see it all the time with younger kids where they're playing year round. They're playing on, 15 different travel teams, and they're going all over and they never stop. And they never stop to train. That's one of the biggest things. Like, you just can't play year round. You're going to create so many imbalances in your body, because obviously baseball is a one-sided game where you're swinging the same way every time, you're rotating the same way every time when you throw.
Bigger problems in the warm weather areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We see some of our guys in LA that they just never stop, you know, and that's why there's such a, there's just kind of this crisis with arm health, because they're just playing year round. And you see these kids that are 12, 13, 15, you know, having Tommy John surgery, and you're just like, I mean, this is ridiculous, you know, and a lot of it is because they're not doing the other things. They're not, you know, testing their arm. They're not trying to get stronger. They're just out there playing every single weekend. And, you know, the craziest thing I see is where you get a kid that plays on a weekend and they pitch Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and the rules allow it. And you're just like, or they pitch, you know, an inning at 10 o'clock in the morning, and they pitch another inning at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's like, big leaguers don't even do that, you know? So
right.
Big leaguers are getting paid millions of dollars to do it. Why do you think it's okay for a 12-year-old to do that stuff? You know what I mean? So it just, that part of it is a little bit frustrating. And I think just the travel ball culture has kind of fooled parents into believing that you have to do all that. If you don't do that, you're not going to get exposure, or you're not going to be good. Or actually, on the training side, if you train a little bit more, you're probably going to be better at baseball than just, you know, just simply playing baseball usually doesn't make you better. You have to do the other things to help with that.
We're with Joe Beimel. We just talk a lot of philosophy. And Joe, to get your content, what you put on social media, give me the Instagram and the other places you post, because I see it on Facebook, and I just think everything's gold stuff to me. Where can we find that for people that might be interested?
I do have Instagram. That's probably the thing I post on the most. I think usually my Instagram posts just go right to Facebook, because I didn't necessarily have a Facebook for a long time.
That's why I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we were selling like plyo balls on Instagram, and then I needed to have Facebook to be able to do that through like Meta or whatever. So I ended up getting one, and I never used it. So then I was like, well, I've realized since being back home, it's such a useful tool, especially in this area where people just, they love the content that's on there, and I feel like it just reaches more people. You know, especially in the area, my wife has like an event planning business, and it's crazy the responses she gets on there. So, you know, I posted on there a little bit more. So I'm on Facebook, on Instagram. I do have like a Twitter or an X account, which I'm starting to post a little bit more on that, but I don't really do much on there, or YouTube. So I'd say Instagram. Okay. I think
Beimel Elite Athletics.
Yes. And then we have our Los Angeles. We have BEA Los Angeles, BEA Texas on there. Okay. So that's usually the stuff that's going on with our facilities. And then my personal Instagram, I kind of put a lot of that stuff on there too. And it's more, you know, a lot of baseball related stuff, but then, you know, I put some bowling stuff on there once in a while, or some family stuff, but it's usually something pretty much everybody wants to see baseball content, from my personal page. So that's usually what I'm doing.
You mentioned bowling. What's your average right now, and how many leagues you in?
Oh man, my average right now, we started the winter league, and it's just, I didn't start very good. I bowled this summer and I averaged 222. So I was like super pumped about that. I'm like, oh yeah, I finally got it. Cause I went, you know, I bowled when I was younger, till I was about 12. And then once I was wrestling and playing sports, you know, bowling was on Saturday, so I couldn't really do it.
Happens to all of us.
Yeah. And then, you know, moved away, and I'd bowl once in a while in spring training, things like that. And I was still decent. But then once I moved back to the area, I got in a couple of leagues. So I bowl on Wednesdays and Thursday nights. So last Thursday I hit a 691 And then last night I bowled another 691. So I'm looking to hit over 700 tonight. We got a, I just got a couple new bowling balls. So I'm starting to break them in.
Any 300 games?
I do not. Last year I hit a 299. Thought the last ball was good. I threw it and it kind of cut through the face and I left the pin. So I hit 299. And then I
Mookie Betts? I mean, is Mookie Betts above your head here?
No, I'm way better. I've been on a couple podcasts like with guys in the LA area, and they're like, "Oh, Mookie Betts, maybe you'll be the next Mookie Betts or something." I'm like, "What? I'm way better than him." So there's an app called Lane Talk, right? So you can go on Lane Talk and you can compare yourself to like PBA guys. And because right. Mookie Betts has bowled a couple PBA events, he's actually on there. So I can compare myself to him and I'm just like head and shoulder above how good he is. I'm way better.
Bowling is numbers. Yeah, bowling is numbers. And you have it, man. You got him.
Yeah.
Joe Bimel has pitched into major leagues for a long time. Joe, I'm looking at the all-time games played, and you are tied at 149th all-time. Do you know what Hall of Famer you're tied with?
I do not. I'm not Robin, sure.
Robin Roberts.
Oh, okay.
Hall of Famer from the 50s.
Wade
Hoyt is at 151. He read a great book. Dan Quisenberry, which would be a guy you might remember. Before we get into this is one question somebody asked me to ask you. Who was your baseball hero growing up? Who was your favorite player? Who inspired you at the young age?
I had a bunch. It was usually hitters. I always liked hitters. I didn't necessarily love pitchers until, you know, I got into like college.
Right.
So I loved Mark McGwire. I loved Eric Davis, Ken Griffey Jr. I loved Barry Bonds, you know, all those guys with the Pirates, Van Slyke, Bonilla. It was just funny because I got to play against most of those guys. Yeah. You know, I got to play against McGwire. I got to play against Griffey and Bonds and Bonilla. And then had Andy Van Slyke as a first base coach in Seattle. And then I'd say pitching wise, I always liked Greg Maddux. He was obviously a good one to like. And then you got to be teammates with him as well. So it was just, you know, obviously it was a fun career and I got to experience a lot of things, but I'd say that's probably the coolest when you have like somebody's poster in your bedroom and now all of a sudden you're actually trying to get them out. That was just one thing I wasn't ever expecting. You know, I always expected I was going to play in the big leagues. It was my dream to do it, but I never at any moment when I was a kid thought, oh, I'm going to be facing like Barry Bonds when I'm in the big leagues, you know, it's kind of just really weird. And, you know, it really blows your mind, especially when you know, I'm 48 now and I just sit back and think about it and look like, that's crazy. Like I go to my parents' house and I got a bunch of my old baseball cards and I've got like just pages of like Ken Griffey Jr. and Mark McGwire, Frank Thomas, Ricky Henderson. You know, and I played against all of those guys. So it's just, it's pretty surreal.
We'll get into how you, some numbers against some of those guys you mentioned. I have some pretty good numbers we'll have fun with. The other question is, you're a retired baseball player with a lot of years under your belt. As specific as you want to, what does a retired Major League Baseball player, what benefits are you enjoying or have as a retired baseball player as far as retirement, healthcare, stuff like that? And I'm sure there's different levels of service on what you get. How would you sum that up? That's an interesting question that a lot of people have asked.
Yeah. As far as healthcare, so basically when you're playing, you get like the best healthcare that the law will allow. And then once you retire, you still have access to that, but you have to pay for it. And there's different tiers. You can do like, you know, the best one is just a little more expensive. not a little more, it's a lot more. You know, obviously healthcare is not cheap, no matter who you are. But once, if you do get rid of it and you go to a different plan, you can never get it back. So I've just kind of, I've kept that, over the years. Obviously you pay by the month for that. It's expensive, but, definitely worth it. And then, baseball also lets you, add to like a 401k. They've got a, you know, during the season, they've got like pre-tax that you can put a certain amount in, post-tax, you can put a certain amount in. So I just always put the maximum amount I could into that. So I've just kind of got that. That's waiting for me to get old, older, I should say. Right. And then because I have 10 years, I have my pension maxed out. So I can take that anytime at 45 and all the way up to 62. Obviously you get the most money when you turn 62. So I kind of have that as well waiting for me. And it just, they're, you know, it's, you, I think it's at, if you take it at 62, you get like 260,000 a year after that, you know. And like I said, the earlier you take it, the less it is, but you've got to kind of make that decision on your own to see what you want to do. You know, and if you take it at 45, it's drastically less, but still pretty good.
And the amount of service time does reflect what you get.
Yes. Yeah. And I think if you have just one day, you get something, but, 10 years, it doesn't matter. You have 10 years or you have 20 years, you get the same, you know, it maxes out at 10 years. So that's why you see so many players want to play 10 years and, you know, I posted about this recently, but there's literally only like 1800 people. It's less than 10% of everybody who's ever played in the big leagues get 10 years of service time. So there aren't many of us. You know, 1800 out of I think it's up to like 22,000 or something that have who've played in the big leagues, and that's even the guys who have played one day or got one at bat. You know, out of those 22,000, there's only 1800, around 1800 that have 10 years. So it's pretty rare to do it. That's why I feel, you know, super blessed that I was able to play that long and, do have those benefits from, you know, making sure I took care of myself and was able to play as long as I did.
Yeah, that's very interesting stuff. And we'll sum it up with some things about your career. But the one thing I wanted to so you pitched from seven major league teams. There were four other organizations that you played for, did not play in the majors for. That'd be your minor league stuff. I have you with 17 different minor league cities that you played for. Can you name 17? That's counting indie ball.
All right. I'm pretty sure I can. All right. So we got Erie. We have Hickory, North Carolina, Lynchburg, Virginia, Altoona, Pennsylvania, Rochester, New York. Let's see. Durham, North Carolina, Las Vegas. Let's see. I'm trying to think here. There are a couple in there that were rehab assignments, so I don't know if those count.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So there was I was with the Nationals and I was on a rehab assignment. I can't remember the Potomac.
Yes.
There's a Potomac in there. That was a disastrous outing. So let's see.
One inning, seven hits, five earned runs. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just rehab and everybody was swinging first pitch at everything. I'm like, oh my gosh. Son's like in the outfielder's eyes and he misses it. I'm like, come on, guys. Let's go. Help me out here. So what's that? That's eight, I think. Yeah. And then Colorado Springs.
Yep.
I was there for a little bit. Let me see. Indianapolis. I was there for a little bit with the Pirates, 2011. Yep. I was also in Bradenton because that was a rehab assignment.
Right.
So that's 10, I think, right?
You're going chronologically, which you're nailing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And actually, Altoona's 11. You were there twice on your stats.
So oh, that's right. That's right.
I'm counting that as
Gwinnett,
one.
Gwinnett, Georgia is one. Omaha is one for sure.
Then we talked about the two at the end.
Yeah, San Antonio and El Paso. And then I had New Britain.
You're missing one.
Trying to think.
You skipped over it after Gwinnett.
Yeah, I can't even. What's the
Mariners.
One? Mariners. Yeah, I'm trying to. Why can I not think of the city up there? Tacoma.
Yes. Well done. You obviously have a good memory of that because that's up there on the amount of teams. Favorite place to pitch. And that doesn't have to be one of these 17 in the minors. We're going to talk minors here. What venue really sticks out to you as one of your favorite?
Oh man, that's a tough one.
Okay.
Usually it wasn't. I didn't like any of them. No.
Right. Right.
If I was back there from the big leagues, I probably didn't like most of them. I did I like pitching in Las Vegas. I pitched really well there. And then that's why I got called up to LA. I liked San Antonio and El Paso. I was living in El Paso at the time that I was playing there. So that was pretty cool.
Right.
And then my business was there. So, you know, guys that we train were coming to the games, stuff like that. That was pretty cool. And then I'd say Erie. Yeah. I liked that just because that was my first year and it was close to home. And then I would probably say my favorite was Altoona just because it was so close to home. I was a starter as well, so I knew when I was pitching and everybody from home was coming, you know, coming down there and watching. So that was probably my favorite back in 2000.
So, okay, this is a selected collection. These are all Hall of Famers minus Bonds against Joe Bimel. Barry Bonds, 1 for 16. Todd Helton, 4 for 16. Fred McGriff, 1 for 9. Ken Griffey Jr., 1 for 10. Larry Walker, 1 for 6. Tony Gwynn, I said, 2 for 5. Ortiz, 2 for 5. That's a bunch of lefties and Bonds in the Hall of Fame, 12 for 67. Is that why you had a job in the majors for as long as you did?
I think so.
Where's that rank?
Yeah, that's where it was one of those things. Like I would say, like the guys like that, it's just so easy to get yourself mentally prepared and just the adrenaline kind of takes over. Sometimes it's a little harder when somebody comes up, you don't know who they are. You don't have much, you know, data or scouting reports on them, or they're just, you know, I hate to say you kind of relax, but it was always guys like Craig Paquette or, you know, somebody who wasn't, you know, they were a great player. Obviously they're in the big leagues, but they didn't have like a great reputation as being somebody who's going to do damage against you. And I feel like those guys always hit me better than some of the bigger guys, you know. And obviously Tony Gwynn was phenomenal. And I gave up his last home run of his career.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's just, I think it was just easier for me to kind of get myself up for the challenge and get that adrenaline flowing with those guys. And like I said, I loved all those guys growing up. And so now when you play against them, it's, you know, I was never really intimidated by them. I just was like, this is pretty cool. I'm going to just go right after them because I feel like I owe that to them, you know?
Right. Well, that's a good point. A couple lefties that you didn't fare as well. They're not in the Hall of Fame. So Ryan Howard was 7 for 15, Prince Fielder 6 for 18. The one that, yeah. And then there's some right-handed guys. Well, Albert Pujols was 5 for 13, but you know, you faced him at the peak of his powers. I mean, his first decade or first 7-8 years of his career was up there amongst the best.
Yeah. Yeah. And even those guys like Ryan Howard and Prince Fielder, I did at one point had like really good numbers against both of them. And then it was like one season they got, I think a couple of them, both of them got like three hits in that season or something like that.
Right.
So leading up to like the 1 year, I think the 1 year in Colorado, I didn't have great numbers against Ryan Howard, but before that, I think they were pretty decent. And then, you know, he had just like the 1 year where it was, he hit me well. And same thing, Prince Fielder, I gave up a home run to him in Seattle. And that was actually when I was battling that injury. That was over that period we talked about earlier in 2015, right, when he was with Texas. But, you know, yeah, I mean, those guys were tough outs. So, and that's the life of a left-handed reliever too, where you can get them out 10 times in a row and then you give up five hits in a row and now they're doing pretty well against you, you know?
The so one that I got a kick, I got a kick out of, and I didn't realize this guy would still be playing when you started. Jose Cruz, 0-for-4 against Joe Bimel.
Yeah. Yeah. He ended up being a teammate as well. So yeah, it's just, like I said, it was just fun to be able to face some of those guys that you grew up playing or you grew up rooting for and collecting their cards and watching them on TV. And it just made the experience that much better.
Ever been ejected from a game?
I was never. Nope. Not in the big leagues, not in the minor leagues. I did get ejected in the Junior College World Series, for a reason I still don't know to this day. We were losing our final game there back, you know, my sophomore year, and I was not saying a word. I was just standing there and I had my jacket on.
Identity type thing.
Well, yeah, somebody, the umpire goes, number 26, you're gone. And I was just like, 26, like that's, I was like, wait a second, that's me. But then I'm like, I have a jacket on. How do you know what number I am? And there were rumors that the coach had mentioned to the umpire, he had said like, hey, I'm going to throw somebody out if your guys don't stop chirping or whatever. And apparently he said, if you have to throw somebody out, throw number 26 out. And I'm just like, okay. So he really liked me apparently.
There's so many things we could talk about. Obviously your career spanned a long time. And, you know, I look at the end of the story I wrote with you on in 2017, and the quote you gave me was, I basically played my whole career with nothing above average as my second pitch. I had a good sinker and could locate my fastball. And then I said, that's an anomaly for a big league pitcher. And you said, I'm an anomaly for a lot of different reasons. And I go back to that. I'm like, that nails it. And to be able to sit back and recall the year, how proud are you? And how did you surprise yourself that you can sit back and say, boy, I was around this game for a long time. I loved it. And now you're giving back to these kids. I mean, talk about what baseball means to you as we end this discussion.
Well, I mean, I just love it. And I love, you know, obviously I love the game itself, but I love the other things probably a little more. Like I loved being in the clubhouse every day. I loved being around the guys. I think, you know, over the years, as you get further and further away from playing, that's probably the biggest thing that you miss is just those relationships you have with people who, you know, you're around them more than your family. So, I always expected, I mean, I've been saying, I always told people, even when I got drafted, I wanted to play till I was 40. And then once I was playing, I was like, well, I might as well play until I'm 50, and didn't make it that far. I don't plan on making a comeback or anything at 48 to reach that. I did actually get asked to play in like a Hall of Fame game over Memorial Day weekend in Cooperstown. So I might do that, but I said I wouldn't show up there if I couldn't throw 90. So I've got to start training again and come back, see if I can hit 90 at 48, 49. But yeah, with that being said,
I always expected to play for a long time, and that's why I kept trying to learn different techniques, different throwing programs, different recovery programs, just because, you know, I was kind of always the weird guy in the clubhouse that would be doing some, you know, I did the Egoscue method for my body alignment, and I'd be laying there and in this contraption, and people are just walking by, like teammates, like, what is wrong with you? Like, why are you doing that? I'd be like, well, this is why I'm going to play. Like, when you're going to be retired, I'm going to still be playing, and you're going to be asking me for tickets. So I joke around with the guys about that. But, you know, it served me well as a player to keep playing for that long, because that's what I expected and that's what I wanted to do. So I knew I had to kind of reinvent myself a couple times. But it's also just helped tremendously with having, you know, baseball training programs, because you know, obviously I played for that long, and I can just kind of be like, hey, here, this is what you need to do. You can do all this stuff. It's going to take a lot of work. You know, it's going to take a lot of time, but if you want to do something great and you want to play for a long time and you want to get to the highest level possible, these are the things you need to do. And, you know, not to say that what I did works for everybody, but there's ways that we can, you know, adjust it for everyone and make sure that happens for the guys that we train.
Joe, we got to leave. Last thing, who you got in the World Series, Dodgers or Blue Jays?
I've got the Dodgers. I mean, I love playing in LA. I was hoping the Mariners made it. You know, I was possibly going to fly out there if the Mariners made it. But
you're that close to having two of your former teams in the series.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Blue Jays are good. They're tough, but I just don't see how you're going to beat the Dodgers with the pitching that they have, the hitting that they have. They're just so good. So I'll be rooting for them for sure.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, man. Well, good talking to you.